show, we have Rick the Hotto Thayer. I promised I would pronounce it right, and I just nailed it.
Is that it?
Thayer.
Thayer, okay.
Like fire with a thigh. Okay. Thayer. I'm not going to mess that up.
The Thayer pronunciation.
You ever heard of a little tournament called Combo Breaker?
Loosely.
Are you involved in any way, shape, and form with Combo Breaker?
Loosely.
Okay. Well, we have a lot of questions. The numbers are out. How many people entered that tournament? I bet you there's some interesting factoids and data and numbers in there. We'll be digging into that as well as plenty of other stuff. The Hotto, Rick Thayer, has told me I'm probably just going to steer the conversation over and over and over again to the Tekken World Tour. So be prepared. and that's fine. We're very excited to have him on the show. But first, like we do every night, every Tuesday night, we're going to start off by introducing our compatriots here. John Velociraptor Guerrero. That's him right there.
What's up, team?
Hey, what's up, John? And Steve Ace King Offsuit Jurek. What is he doing?
I have no idea. I never know what I'm doing.
Which stage is that? That's like the Infinite something or Infinite Azure?
That is Infinite Azure, my friend.
And I don't know.
Because I can't be contained by walls.
That's what I heard. I'm not sure what it is that Elon did, but apparently you can throw tomatoes at us or something.
Here.
Shout outs to Anonymous.
Don't actually read his name if he's purposely subbing anonymously.
But it says right there.
Okay.
Oh, wait. I have a new... Wait for it. I got a new one. Wait. Check this one out.
Oh, wow, and Ace. Oh, that's a good one. That might have to be like a permanent one.
What is that?
Go back to it. John didn't see it. There it is.
No, it's... No, I... Great.
What y'all think in the chat, y'all? Anyway, we're very excited. So, we're going to be talking about a lot of stuff. Most importantly, Marvel vs. Capcom Infinite got a patch. You're pumped, right? You coming back to the game?
It got, what was the exact quote? Minor system changes?
Yeah, we'll talk about what those system changes are in a bit.
Okay. First and foremost, how about a recap, Steve?
Yeah, I guess we can do that.
Okay.
Busy week, and it kicked off with, of course, everyone's favorite show, E-League the Challenger. episode 4 of 5, so the build-up to the finale is set. It was a double elimination challenge.
Hey,
JB won
here.
Both immunity challenges, so he punched his ticket to the final. In the first elimination match, JB threw Guilty into the eliminator. Guilty picked picked Rob, excuse me. I'm not good with this. Beat Rob 5-2. And then in the second match, it came down to Commander Jesse and Guilty. 5-1 win for Jesse. So your grand final is set this Friday. JB versus Commander Jesse.
No way.
Winner goes to E-League.
Oh, wow. It's exactly the grand finals I predicted weeks ago. And we're going to get to watch Dawson versus Pre-Patch Rashid. Awesome. I wonder who's going to win.
Little bit of something interesting here. There are 24 people that are going to make E-League. 1 through this and 23 through invitation. 22 have been named. There's still one person out there, in addition to whoever wins this, that hasn't announced themselves. So I'm wondering, a la the Ultimate Fighter 1, if both finalists might end up in the E-League field.
Or maybe it's low tier God.
Hopefully. We can only hope.
I heard it was going to be John. John, didn't you? Aren't you the secret competitor?
Well, no. Nope.
You're not supposed to... Oh, damn. Sorry, dude. I wasn't supposed to reveal that. Anyway, good luck. Good luck at E-League. All right, cool. I had been DVRing them, and the other night I sat there and tried to watch them all. They're not that good.
How far did you get?
I saw everything except for this latest episode.
Really? Did you watch like 3 episodes of E-League?
I had seen the first one. I binged 2 of them.
44 minutes of E-League?
Huh? And then, you know, it's fine. I don't feel like it was staged like people were saying. You know, it all seems
legit.
No, I
don't think the gameplay was staged or anything.
I just wonder. Actually, that's one of the questions I have for Rick. You know, FGC in all its forms. Reality TV? How do you feel about that? But you know, I guess it's entertaining and it's giving us exposure.
Yeah, it's weird because I feel like there's potential for a good show here, but it doesn't really click for me as a Street Fighter show. It doesn't really click as an exhibition of these people, and it doesn't really click as a reality show. You know, the reality competition aspect isn't really coming through for me. So it feels like it's trying to do a bunch of things, not really succeeding at any. But
more importantly, shouts to Sencho for the sub.
Yes.
Thank you very much.
And we got to watch Goat Yoga. So.
Oh yeah, I did. Didn't I actually get like dumped all over, quite literally? Yeah. That was funny. I enjoyed that. All right, so moving on back to the recap, please.
All right, let's go to more traditional tournaments, kicking off with the Latin America South online event this weekend in the CPT. This was for South America, and it was Brolinho who fought back through a couple of disconnect problems early in Top 8 to take it over HK Dash, coming up through the loser's bracket in Grand Final. You see Zenith and Stunner, some of the more familiar names when it comes to Latin American tournaments. Dark, Picaro, Preda, all those guys in there. So Brolinho, with his third online win over the last 3 years. He won once in 2016, once last year, once this year. He's figuring out the lag switch tech. I don't know. I'm not saying he's lag switching.
No, that's on the record. It's too late.
He's dealing with it.
Do you guys know we were covering this earlier on, you know, before Top 8 and such, and our tournament coverage guy let us know that Brolinho was playing Alex for up until Top 8.
Oh, really?
So he got there with Alex. I mean, Alex plus lag switch, of course, so it doesn't mean the character's good or anything like that. But this is something noteworthy that someone took Alex all the way to a Top 8 of an online tournament.
Yeah, that is of note. I think that means automatically that you owe somebody some Chun-Li costumes for some reason.
Just because someone made Top 8 at Latin America Online with Alex?
Mm-hmm. Seems like something appropriate.
And then didn't play Alex in the Top 8.
Damn it. All right, fine. Chun-Li DLC retracted.
But let's take a look at the global standings now after that event. And not a whole lot of change, but you see on that left-hand column, you got three names from the Latin America region in the top 10. Cobb at number 7, Menardi at 8, Brolinho now at 9. So the region that everyone thought was the weakest, they're coming in strong right now.
Yeah, but how many more could we see potentially if there were more events with a higher point spread in that region? Because you could make the argument that as a whole, that region does not have enough points to go around.
They have more ranking events than anybody, but the strength of ranking events this year is just so low that it's all about premieres. Go ahead.
It's just kind of interesting because I actually do think it will help a few more Latin American players make it in that they don't have as many premier events.
Okay,
because I think you won't have as many people coming out to snipe them. So I think you'll have a good amount of like, some dude consistently gets second or first at, you know, a bunch of the Latin America events and makes it in that way.
Yes,
but certainly there won't be a wide enough representation as maybe there could possibly
be. Caba and Mena have traveled. I assume Brolinho has probably traveled. You know, they have the ability to do so.
Yeah, no, certainly. And there's definitely a few North American players who have been consistently going to Latin events and probably will continue to.
Mm-hmm.
I would say expect to see, you know, Chris T and Flash Metroid, who have done that a lot in the past, continue to do that.
Right on.
Absolutely.
Steve.
Let's roll on to the Tekken World Tour with not Texas Showdown. I'm sorry. This
damn
has been a
Steve. Oof. No.
Oof. It's been a rough week for me.
You can donate bits to throw tomatoes at Steve, by the way. That's a thing.
I'll just throw something at myself. Here. There. The Colosseum in Rome, Italy, which is certainly not Texas Showdown. That went down this past weekend. And it was the great Italian Hope Tishuman taking it over Asim. It was really interesting because Tishuman just blew through the bracket up until grand final. And then Asim came in, nearly took him in the winner's final, nearly took him in grand final. So strong showing for him, but just not enough to take down the Japanese player who has made his adoptive home in Italy. If we take a look at the global standings for the Tekken World Tour, you see Tishuman now tied for 10th place with 150 points. You're going to start to see some separation over the next few weeks because you've got the next three events are all master events. You've got Battle Arena Melbourne this weekend, Combo Breaker next weekend, and then 2 weeks after that it will be Fighting Game Challenge in Poland. So expect to see some players make some big moves in the coming weeks.
How many make it again?
It will be the top 19 automatically qualify,
okay,
and then the final spot goes to a last chance qualifier at the site of the finals, which is the Netherlands.
And then it works in like a group stage, right, where they have like five-man groups or something like that?
Yep, just like last year. The only difference is the top four players will be in separate pools, but they won't reveal which pools they are in until after everyone has picked. So
I like that format.
You don't know if you're going to be facing JDCR or Nii or Sane as your top seed. Or maybe Anakin. Who knows who's going to get that top spot?
It's a good format.
John, are you getting bits to throw shit at people?
No.
I see you looking down at your phone. You're doing it, aren't you? Got him. All right, moving on.
He is busted. Let's take it back to Street Fighter. Over in Japan, there was a qualifier for the Red Bull Kumite, and that was won by the artist formerly known as Yukidan, Fujimura. I don't know how long I'm going to call him that, but
it's still necessary, and I appreciate that you did that, because like the first second I was like, who's this Fujimura guy? We should be paying more attention to... Oh, it's Yukidan.
Wait, Yukidan changed his name to Fujimura?
Yeah.
Yuck.
All right. So, yeah, he took it over Haku, so he is headed to Red Bull Kumite, which will take place in November this year, so... remember that log jam we had last year with CPT or with E-League Finals and Stunfest and Combo Breaker all at the same time?
Yes.
Not happening this year because Stunfest is this weekend, Combo Breaker's next weekend, and then Red Bull Kumite moved over to November. So
Right on.
A little more breathing room.
Hey, yeah, did I see Trashbox on that list?
Yes.
That's the dude that has the most points by like 18 million on CFN.
Yeah, he's got
like
300,000, yeah.
I just recently got to master, which is 30K, and I was feeling like
he's got 10
man,
times
like
more points than
good.
You.
Yeah, this is a good achievement. Like, all right, we're back in there, right? And then I look at the leaderboards, and like some of these guys have like 160, 200, 300, and I'm like, what is life anymore? It doesn't even matter. But it's good to see that someone like that could still get seventh at an event and not just win it all out. So cool.
Okay. Neat.
All right. Let's go north of the American border to Canada Cup. They had their Master Series event this past weekend. Street Fighter, they used a bit of a different format. You know, it was a regular tournament up until top eight. And then on Sunday, everybody played round robin to determine who the winner would be. And that winner was Justin Wah. Oh, that was a terrible
impersonation. Yeah, dude. Come on. You know what? Try it again.
No. I don't deserve a second chance. But Justin taking it. Punk finishing second, tied with LPN, but got the head-to-head. You see Ricky, K-Brad, PR-Rog. Cyril Blast, the only Canadian to make it into the top eight, had the country on his back. Strong showings for him. Didn't quite go his way on Sunday, but still a good showing.
Did any of the, because these guys were supposed to do for those stretch goals for that, the Macharino, right? Like Justin Wong was supposed to drop an elbow onto K-Brad from off the top rope somewhere, and all these guys were supposed to do drunk karaoke, and I don't remember ever seeing any of that come to fruition. Did anyone else see that, or is that just like, hey, give us $5,000 and we'll do all this stuff, and then they never did?
I do know that they did some drunk karaoke. I know Goichi did the One Punch Man theme, and it is just as amazing as you think it would be.
Fair enough.
So apparently some of the other players did karaoke too. All I saw was Goichi. So
The one thing I saw that was incredibly impressive, if you ask me, was of course Justin Wong's bulk. Who was in on that? Who saw that? Let's get a taste.
Yeah, he pretty much washed almost everyone with bulk.
Let me fast forward a little bit.
And I think he beat K-Brad in 10 straight rounds. It was bad.
Well, and then how much of this is people not knowing Falk because, like, everyone's like, oh, she's really bad and no one's going to play her, versus how much of it is, you know, Justin Wong being just really good with her?
No, I think Falk is OP. We just didn't know. She's broken.
No, but really, like, that's something, because everyone was so against this character. Like, she looks bad. She is bad. You know, Infiltration, I don't know how jokingly calling her, like, the worst character in the game. But certainly no one expected her to show up in any top eights. And then here we have her winning. Now, this isn't a Capcom Pro Tour event. And if you watched it, it was very lighthearted. These guys were kind of just, like, almost joking around on a Saturday afternoon as opposed to being at, like, a legit tournament. Like, that was kind of, like, the air about it. But, I mean, there's still some significance in here in this brand new character winning an event like this.
He definitely made her look a lot better than anyone thought she was.
I'm going to fast forward, and I hope you – this isn't a spoiler or anything, but you just got to see his finish, man. It was intense. Yeah, let's watch that.
The way he won and the way he played, I'm not fast to say that Falk is any amazing character more so than just he completely out-solided the people he played versus.
Look at that.
I mean,
he really made it happen.
And I think this format really plays to Justin's strengths, and he made it happen.
We'll keep watching this. Good. Keep talking about Falk so we can leave it on this clip.
Well, and I feel like she's a defensive character. She has to be, right?
Yeah,
like,
for sure.
She's not all about that rushdown. She's got some great strings, like right here, I think it is, where you can't push anything. She's like plus 8,000.
Yeah, she gets like a jillion chip damage pretty much for free.
Yeah. Yeah,
boom!
But most of the time,
look at
just
that.
Him hanging back, exactly, and waiting for you to enter that area where she can hit you from, because she's got great distance, she's just not very fast about it. And the controller disconnected even before the animation's done there. But I really do think that in a game like Street Fighter V, where defensive play is not usually the best, and that's safe for, you know, like Guile, maybe not, but in general, like, if you were defensive, especially earlier on in Street Fighter V, you were not a good character. And then here we have Falk come in, and it's like, that's kind of how Justin's been playing her, and he's seen a lot of success. So maybe that's a testament to the game growing and to it becoming a little bit more versatile I don't know. But I think that this is an interesting new thing, and it's a good look overall for Street Fighter V.
Well, we had K-Brad's reaction here. I seriously hate the argument that Justin Wong is winning with X characters, so they must be good now. This is the same dude that was bodying people with Dan and cooking with Random Select. He's literally the king of games. Use someone else, please, and thank you.
I thought Yukimoto was king of games.
That reference went over my head.
That's... God damn it. I'm just 0 for everything today. I'm sorry.
It was a good delivery. I didn't get it either, but I'm sure the comedic timing was spot on, so thank
you. Yeah, that was right on point. People in the chat are asking, Yu-Gi-Oh? What the fuck are you talking about? No, seriously, what are you talking about, man?
It's time for a duel.
It is time for a duel.
It was an interesting format, though. Like, it took a hell of a long time, for sure. I mean, obviously, to run all of those first to fives, but yeah. I think that was kind of the point of the event, and I think it was pretty cool to watch.
You have some other Canada Cup stats here for us, Steve?
Yeah, there were other events at the tournament besides Street Fighter. You had Dragon Ball Z, and, you know, if Dragon Ball Z is there and Goichi's there, Goichi's taking it all. Beat Chris G, went undefeated throughout the tournament, and then dominated Teemo 10-1 in their exhibition. So another strong weekend for him. Mewtwo King had a good weekend in Smash. Punk ended up taking the Marvel crown, and then Justin, on top of his Street Fighter V win, also took the title in both Ultra and Tekken.
You remember when we had Teemo on the show and it was like, yeah, man, Marvel, it's a new era, let's bring this guy on and let's talk about him? Feels like a lifetime ago.
Well, he's been doing good in Dragon Ball, and he did make it to partway through the summit voting. I think he's eliminated by now. But, yeah, I mean, an exhibition versus Goichi at this point is just kind of like a ticket to death. It's almost like a bad thing to accept. It's like you're just going to lose, and it's just like how many games you get is how good people are going to think you are. When in reality, I mean, someone did – he's like 101 in tournament sets, and the one he lost was to his training partner who he then beat and ended up winning the tournament anyway. So I don't think seeing 10-1 should make you necessarily think someone's bad when it's versus a guy who is basically untouchable for now.
Sure, I'm just feeling like, damn, what a shame that Marvel just had so much potential. And then it crashed.
And then just snap the fingers.
Got its huge update, though, yesterday.
Yeah.
Do y'all want to talk about that?
Let's do it.
DRM removal. You pointed something out, or somebody tweeted it to you.
Someone tweeted us, yeah, that essentially what the update seems to have done, and I don't know 100% of the details, is removed the DRM from the game. And typically, that is a sign that, you know, they don't think they're going to get many more sales and thus aren't as worried about piracy. So it kind of looked very exciting and then ended up not being very exciting.
De novo, is that how you pronounce that?
Yeah, de novo is the name of the piracy.
Now it should be pointed out that some people have reported issues with the game running the DRM.
I see. So they're removing it to make it a better experience.
Load times have been reported as faster. General overall performance has improved slightly in the game, at least according to early reports. So it's not like it's only saying, okay, we don't care about the game anymore. It is a patch that does make the game better, but at least in some aspects, but it's still a bunch of radio silence from Capcom on this, you know?
And I don't think you're going to see anything else.
And what I understand is how come some of on some of the consoles or platforms, the update is much larger than others? What's that all about?
Because the DRM is it's only on PC, right? Is that not a console thing?
Well, it's kind of harder to pirate, I guess, on PS4 than it is on PC.
Yeah, and I think that's exclusive to PC. I might be wrong, because I'm not an expert.
Yeah, and
I'm
then it's also
kind
I think
of researching this.
Yeah, certainly that much is true. And on Steam, I think like part of the thing is you have to download all previous patches at the same time whenever you download a patch. So that's why it's 10 gigs instead of 400 megs like it is on PS4 or whatever.
Right. Yeah. And Xbox, the way the game updates on both Xbox and PC is that it basically replaces the entire file, whether, you know, if it's small parts or big parts, they just replace the entire thing.
What kind of parts are your favorite parts, download. Steve?
We're not going to talk about my favorite parts.
But do you like them bigger or small? I'm asking.
Was it I forget the name of the company, Duvo or what was it?
De Novo.
They also work with Injustice 2. They also work with Tekken 7. And about a month ago, Harada came out saying that there were a couple Tekken 7 problems that were happening because of that third party being with them, and they weren't going to sever ties with them. They're still working with them, but like this has been a thing for Unreal games in particular, Unreal Engine games, I should say. And so this is not just like a Marvel-only thing. That's like other companies have been experiencing the same kind of stuff, and I think Marvel's one of the only ones to actually make that disconnect happen. And it very well could be it's because, like, well, we're not worried about our game getting pirated very much anymore, so we can go ahead and do that and just
probably be thankful.
Yeah, exactly, and make it like so the experience for those that are still playing can be a little bit better. And hey, you want to pirate? Go ahead.
You know, speaking of piracy,
I was so setting you up for that, and I'm so glad you picked it.
Thank you, John. I really like pirates. No, just kidding. Arturo Sanchez, Sabin, NYC Furby took to Twitter to tell you sons of bitches to quit pirating his shit. All right, he's had enough. Who's gonna read this wonderful quote?
You usually do.
Arturo NYC Furby Sanchez on people uploading others' Twitch archives to their own YouTube channels. Quote, the fight against people that pirate tourney VODs will continue. One way is immediate uploads. Why do we care so much? Some of these pirate VOD channels make thousands a month in ad revenue off tourney footage. Meanwhile, the actual streamer of said content gets absolutely nothing, LOL. It's an unsustainable system that needs to end.
If you, I noticed the number of mid-tier streamers in tourneys actually dropping because of this. There's top-tier streamers, and then there's everyone else. Did I say that right? I think I read that right. Dude, that's real shitty. And you know, this is obviously not a new issue. I know Panda has dealt with this before. I work at a company where we live stream lots of events from different sports, and we, on our bigger events, have a small army of people issuing takedown notices and strikes, and it takes a team to do it, literally. Mm-hmm. And they take down hundreds of illegal streams and restreams and archives and people capturing it on screen. They even have people with their phone shooting the screen and live streaming from their, like, shooting their own screen. It's ridiculous. It's a huge issue. It is a substantial dent in their bottom line. And there should be a way to do it easier. I mean, I feel like YouTube, I guess it's hard, right? It's tricky to know whose it is. But, you know, like, you can't pirate a movie and put it on YouTube because there's, like, algorithms that'll find that. People go around it. They, like, squish the footage, play it in reverse, or flip it, play a little faster. So I wonder what we could do to help this issue.
There was, of all people, there was a Low Tier God video about this, and the reason I know about it is because Ernesto Lopez tackled this at the request of Arturo Sanchez, and released a video today. Anyway, they were talking about it, and they said that there is some kind of a rollout coming up by YouTube, or maybe it's out already, I'm not sure, that helps to do that, helps to identify when this kind of a thing is going on, and then actually get the money to the original content creators. So it's something that's on the minds of YouTube. They're like working out for solutions and such. But and I also think that this kind of a thing is gonna happen. This is like we're just seeing the natural process. Live streaming as we see it now is still very new in a lot of ways. And when you have something like this, the regulations aren't gonna be there right at first. And then things like this happen. You find a need for it, and then things get worked out. Regulations get put in place, rules get put in place and stuff. So I have faith that this won't be an issue for all that much longer. But in the meantime, it would be horrible to like to lose streamers like Panda, mm-hmm. like Arturo, like all these guys because we ourselves as the FGC are like taking the content and doing this shitty thing. So I get it. I get why you would do it. But it's very clear that we need to stop doing it now because otherwise we're not going to have nice things anymore.
You know, go ahead.
The other thing that would help is actually from Twitch, because a lot of people have the mindset where if I want to watch it as it's happening, I want to watch it on Twitch. If I want to watch it after it's happened, I'm going to YouTube, because if you want to search VODs on Twitch, it is still a rough process. If I want to pick out one match from the recent Tekken World Tour event or the recent CPT event, I can't really do that unless Capcom clips it or makes it a highlight, and they're not always going to do that. So I either have to wait, you know, go through the footage and try and or go through the video and try to pinpoint where the match starts, or, you know, check on YouTube and 5 minutes after it's happened, it's already up there. You know, and that got us too, you know. If you remember, one of our first episodes was Yipes. I just checked our video, our upload is still on there, and it has 317 views.
Hell yeah.
Someone uploaded it. It's been deleted since, but it had at least 10,000.
So what?
After like 5 days.
So we should all be millionaires, but we're not.
We could have been millionaires, man.
Damn it.
Damn.
That's a lot of bits.
You mentioned
RIPR bits.
Yeah. I don't even know what to do with ourselves anymore. No, it does suck. And it's like, hey, man, I'm doing a service for the people. They want to see this ASAP. They were uploading these matches really quickly. Just don't do it, man. That's shitty. Panda has moved on. He's moved on to bigger, better things. He does still set up streams, but you won't see him on the floor doing what somebody like an Elon here. Elon Wave, would you? There he is. That's the guy. these technical directors and streamers and hardworking people are trying to make a living too. All right. Yep. Thank you, Elon. Anything else people want to say about this? There's a lot of back and forth on it.
Pretty cut and dry. It's a shitty thing to do. Shouldn't do it. It's a shitty thing to do. Hopefully. I mean, I think the best thing that they can do is, as you said, just upload them faster and hope that YouTube makes their algorithms better. Because, I mean, the fact of the matter is, whether people think it's good or bad, obviously people are just clicking on the first thing that shows up when they want to watch a certain match. So,
and Steve, I think you wrote here, is there room for middle-class streamers? Did you write that?
Because that's what I'm sort of worried about, and that's what Art was touching on. If, you know, bigger streamers can survive something like this because they have, you know, more revenue coming in. So it's still a hit and it's still bad, but it's survivable. If it's someone like a BG Callisto or a Funky P, guys who I know have to deal with this all the time, those views could be the difference between making their money back on travel and whatnot or not making it back. So I'm worried about people like them getting squeezed out of tournaments or at least having their potential reach limited because they can't really afford to do it anymore.
And speaking of losing money, Evo Japan took a loss of over $1.1 million.
Yikes.
Now, you know, you got to spend money to make money, right? It was open, wasn't it? Wasn't it like an open tournament?
Yep,
it's
free entry.
I feel like you got to make that splash, right? We'll make our money back next year. These guys make so much money on Evo, y'all. I mean, I don't know that, but maybe it's enough that this doesn't really hurt. It did have a big splash. It had a lot of good competition, and it was an exciting event. And it's crazy to think that, you know, a lot of people, the comment that was coming out of it was, man, this is real grassroots. It feels like a real grassroots event. Yeah, well, that grassroots event lost $1 million. What are your thoughts? Yeah, what you got, John?
It really depends. It can mean a lot like a Django.
Go ahead, John.
It's okay, so you see that, and that's going to be your headline, right? I wrote an article about it. That was the headline, because that's very much true. And they do lose $1.1 million, and that's significant. But you got to read the rest of it. You got to look at the whole picture. It's like this is the first one that they've done. And in business, you know, you usually spend your first year or two not making money on things. Also, Japan is really behind as far as like the esports world goes because of all the gambling laws. And we've talked about this a couple of times. That all said, they are making movements toward getting over this, around these, circumventing these problems. And I mean, they announced at the end of Evo, like it wasn't an official, but it was like one of the guys on stage or whatever was like, yeah, and Evo Japan will be back. So I do think that this is going to be an ongoing thing, and I do think that it will be more and more efficient, one, as the gambling laws are circumvented or better circumvented, and two, just, you know, as, you know, you learn and you – I think there was a problem with the venues or something like that, with like a last minute having to have like day one at one venue and day two at another or something along those lines, and that's going to drive up costs and such. All that to say, you kind of expect this first round to be in the red. Do you expect it to be $1.1 million in the red? I don't know. But again, with all of the, you know, the situation being as it is with Evo or with Japan having the esports problems and such, it's not that big of a surprise. So hopefully next year comes around, we have a little bit better numbers. It still might very well be in the red. But as long as the event doesn't die and as long as we can keep moving forward, I think that eventually it will be profitable and everything will be good.
Shout outs to Trevzor for the sub. Thank you. And to everybody giving us those bits. We don't want you to just cheer or bit at us, whatever the hell you say it. Cheer at us. We want you to throw tomatoes at, or flowers at Mike. Throw flowers at Mike. Throw money at Steve and throw tomatoes at John. Seems fair.
Are you trying to say I need money?
No, I just think that, you know, you're used to it, right? From all your stage acting.
What?
Moving on.
Okay.
You don't think that it's I got to crack a few eggs to make an omelet. You got to spend some money.
I mean, $1 million means a lot of different things to different investors. You know,
sure.
For some, it could be we knew we were going to lose $1 million. That might have been exactly how much they thought they were going to lose. As you said, it was a free entry tournament. So I mean, their methods for making money were different. It could be a horrible loss for them and totally not what they expected. But just the figure $1 million doesn't really mean anything yet. you know,
you know, there was a lot of fanfare, a lot of buildup, and a lot of excitement, and a lot of, hey, we're going to, like, you know, Mark Mann, like, Instagramming that he's on his way to Japan, important meetings, this, that, and the other. I feel like we'll see another one next year.
What's I think we'll see another one. I do think that it's going to take a while, if ever, that it becomes, you know, truly an Evo 2. I don't even know if that's their goal. Yet again, without hearing more numbers, that one doesn't do anything for me.
Yeah, that it's not so much that there was a loss or even that it was a big loss. I just wonder about what is the path to making money here. Because, you know, the biggest thing is, well, they don't have, they can't collect tournament entry fees because that's considered gambling. Well, we don't know if the law is going to change tomorrow, next week, next year, next decade. You know, we don't know that. So I don't know what the path is going forward necessarily. Now, they could very well have, you know, more sponsorships lined up for 2019, better sponsorships, you know, not having to change venues so late in the game might bring that cost down. So I think there's room for success, but really with that big roadblock in the way, I'm worried about what the upper limit is and how far people are willing to, or how long people are willing to take a loss and hope that that law gets changed for an eventual turnaround.
I know a way that more money can be generated. Investing, a.k.a. sports betting.
Wow. You are like the king of segs today.
I'm working on them. You remember Jared, right? Jared Wynn?
Of course I remember
from
Jared.
The Dowdy Sports days. He is currently helping develop – he works at a sports betting site that hasn't launched yet. I'm not going to mention the name. And they do have an esports wing, and he's heading that up. And he was telling me because I reached out to him, what does this mean for y'all? This is a direct quote from my buddy Jared. The states have to pass their own regulations first. It's still illegal everywhere it was before this happened. Some will change that quickly, like New Jersey. The federal government also has regulation coming through. There's a lot to be sorted at federal and state levels. We're not even changing plans, blah, 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 blah. But this will make all the daily fantasy shit more practical to run. We have legal being go on. Anyway, the point is it definitely moves the needle. And by the way, these guys will have an FGC sports betting site as the bracket narrows and all that. This is the one thing that I heard in the news, and then this guy, my buddy Jared, brought it up again. Just to be clear, none of this is a sure thing yet. The big sports leagues and the NCAA will lobby to have everything outlawed again, and the moral police will do what they do. But this ruling and all the money available, I'd be shocked if we didn't get shit legalized. Thank you, Jared, for that. So what do y'all think? I think people want it. I think that if you go to Evo, you see a lot of it already, where it's legal, of course, in Vegas. But the of course, the concern, and we brought it up before, is without sports betting, how will Mike get those boat shoes? No, will it lead to corruption and match fixing and you know, match throwing, all that shit? It's a big mess, guys. So
let me, before we get into that, let me just explain for those who haven't been following the situation in the U.S. New Jersey brought a case to against the government, and it went all the way to the Supreme Court to try and abolish a law that that basically prevented gambling on sports outside of four states that had old laws on the books in before the law came into place. That law was abolished, so New Jersey gambling was legal in Nevada. New Jersey is pushing to have gambling legalized in that state very quickly. Other states can choose to do so or not. So that's where we're at now. It's not necessarily illegal right now, or legal right now. It's just in the process of becoming legal very soon in a state near you.
Who are you going to bet on first, Steve?
I don't have all that much money to bet, so, you know.
Dude, this is the fastest way to make money.
It is
by gambling.
Also It's also the fastest way to lose money.
Yeah, with that attitude.
I know. That's a half a glass half empty mentality right there.
This is a weird one, right? Because this is one of those things where you don't make any money going to a tournament in the FGC, right? You don't. You don't make a dollar until you win anything. Where potentially you could make money by betting on someone else while you're playing. I think there is a lot of grimy room in this so far. So it's going to be really interesting to see the way it gets regulated. Because obviously, if Joe Schmo is playing, like, or not even Joe Schmo, because people won't put money on that, right? There won't be good odds for it. But I mean, like, if you can get some sort of odds on yourself or some guy, do you just take the free money betting against yourself? I don't know. There's a lot of bad room in this that I think isn't necessarily the case in pro sports, where you have a lot more reason to win despite possibly match fixing. Doesn't look good to me. I don't know. I'm worried about it.
Mike, I have a question for you. Specifically for you.
Okay.
Are you going to bet or are you going to be the bookie? Are you going to make the spreads? What are you going to do?
Ooh, I think I'd be a good FGC spreads maker. I think I would be good at that. Someone should hire me for that.
All right. Well,
although I'm kind of anti. Well, whatever. Just hire me for something.
I mean, when the allure of that kind of thing comes about, though, like, and you can actually start making money, that turns a lot of new heads in your direction, though, right? And like, waiting for top eight at Evo, right? And Street Fighter is almost—it's always been like the last game and such. So then, if you want to get a good spot, you got to go early and you got to sit through all the other games. The only way I can make it through Smash Bros. Is doing bets on the Pokemon stages to which evolution
that is the best way to make it through Smash.
That it comes next. God. Yeah, so you're betting on like timer bets on stuff on games you don't like. You're throwing but really. That makes it that takes the entertainment factor and takes the interest factor to a whole new level. I don't think anyone's like arguing that, but like, I like the way that Mike put it, saying like it's like there's a grimy place for it because it it brings in so much negativity. Like how long until like mob people show up at Sonic Fox's door and it's like you're gonna take the loss, and stuff like that, or they'll break your kneecaps or whatever. It's like, is that a route we really want to go down? Well, if we just focus on the fact that we can make more money and grow, then yeah, but those movies always end poorly. So I don't know. It's grimy.
Now the fun bet, and the one that I think that works really well in the FGC, is like odds to win the tournament as a whole. And there's a lot less room for match fixing in that. So I wonder if that'll be something that pops up as a result of this. Because stuff like betting for Tokido to win Evo is a lot more harmless as far as than specific matches. But I'm not an expert on match fixing or anything like that. So,
but yeah, there's even room for griminess in that.
Of course there is, yeah.
Like if you look at DBFC's betting on a grand final between Sonic Fox and Goichi isn't that insane right now. If you give Goichi a call, say, hey, I've got a couple thousand that says, you have an off night in grand finals. The pricing isn't there in fighting games to discourage that, like you were saying. And we don't really have a governing body to take charge of that. I mean, like, what can Capcom do? They can ban you from CPT events, but that doesn't do anything for the Tekken World Tour. That doesn't do anything for DBFZ. You're still going to have avenues. So I don't know how much power to deter people from going to the dark side, I should say. There is.
I think.
Can I just say that? The idea of Steve as the muscle, like standing in the shadows as you play your match, and he's wearing like this pinstripe suit and fedora, just like you only see half his face and the rest is covered in shadow. He just nods at you like you better take the loss is beautiful to me. So if that happens, all worth it.
I will say on the other side, as far as bringing heads to and eyes to watch it, I think the FGC and fighting games might be the most bettable esport on currently. The rounds are short. It's very easy to see who's winning and losing compared to any other game. I think if you were to take a random set of eyes who just wants to bet on something, there is quite literally not an esport easier to bet on and to understand and to have fun watching than the FGC. So in that sense, I think it would be a very good market for it because I think it's way easy. Like League of Legends betting is like, I mean, I played League of Legends at like a pretty high level for a while. I still can't tell what's going on.
And the one stat that was on NPR this morning, yes, I do listen to that on my morning commute, was they were saying, I don't remember the exact number, but they were saying people who are fans of football will watch X amount of games, and they're religious fans, right? People who are betting on football games will watch way more games.
Oh, way more, yeah.
So you could make the argument that this would help viewership. It's like it's really like a deal with the devil. You have to take the good with the bad, but there's plenty of good to come from it. Except, you know, you might lose all your money in your house and maybe your family.
And then I'll show up in the shadow.
He's going to have Sonic Fox's like tail with a pair of scissors.
The week betting is legalized, like me and John are grand finals. Like Steve has broken 10 backs.
Oh, it's going to be good. Fall,
as long as, like, maybe when you enter a tournament, there's, like, a checkbox that you have to check that'll say, I promise not to collude or call my match.
That'll fix it.
I think that might
be. Why haven't we just done that with boxing?
Or, like, pinky swears. Man,
why didn't we just get checkboxes? Darn.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the knowledge is out there now. You're welcome. Get it fixed.
Wizard runs up on stage. You check the box! You check the box!
Wizard would be one of the first dead bodies you'd find in this scenario.
Dang, like, dog. Hey, don't be making throws.
Fighting games are... the last point I'll make on this is that I think fighting games and video games are really, like, interesting and weird place to tell whether someone's match-fixing or not. I just think, like, a dropped combo, some of these things are so subtle but so, like... can be taken somewhere in your mind that it's really hard to tell what's going on or not for sure.
I just have a picture now of how to like specific to the FGC, how to like break people's hands, like open up the Mad Cat's fight stick, put their hands in there. Because
yet again, in professional sports, it's a lot more dangerous to like take a hit, you know, in football or in boxing or stuff like that. It's a little harder to fix a match. It's, like, extremely easy in video games, right? Like, oh, I was nervous and I dropped a combo, you know? It's just, it'll be interesting to see what happens. We're a few years away, but it's coming.
Especially considering that even if you get to one player in, like, a soccer match, you've still got 10 more who can try and score a goal, you know? There's just so many more moving parts you have to deal with in the bigger sports and the team sports than you would in a fighting game or any other single player competition. So,
well, and you don't currently have managers or anything that you're really committing to for the most part either, unless you're a top sponsored player. And even then, it's usually just someone who writes you a check for the most part right now.
Shout out to Chochungo One, who's in the chat for the first time. We wanted to know what you have to think. No, it wasn't a sub. It was just a first time in the stream chat here. Question of the day. If it were legal, would you place bets on FGC tournament results through sports books? Jared Miller at JaredMiller43 says FGC would be a very fun place to bet. Big open tournaments allow for small bets to win big. Wasn't there some conversation about how to better monetize open tournaments in the FGC recently? Sharpie, the purple Sharpie, says... But then I miss out on the look of despair as they have to hand me their money. Drew Rafal says, it's a few months too late.
Isn't that the truth?
There will never be an opportunity like Goichi versus Sonic Fox again.
I was literally ready to put down every dollar that I had to my name. I'm not kidding. Like, I would have done it. So, damn, that would have been great.
OBS Nightmare says, nah, rather make bets with fellow FGC friends. It's already happening. I don't need a bookie doing it for us. We can manage our own bets without the red tape, etc. Forever Evil X says, there's a chance to make money on esports in general because right now the hardcore fan may actually know more than the odds makers. Similar to why hardcore gamblers have moved to niche sports, there's a chance to make money and less risk of non-pay if it's not overseas. McFizzy says, putting my life savings on Fudo for second place.
Savage.
God.
Let's do a quick block grab.
The Daily Double.
Block or grab on betting in the FGC, Mike.
What portion? Like, do I want it? Is that what you're saying?
Do you want betting, block or grab in the FGC?
I will be the moral police and say block. Even though I've done it many times,
John.
I don't think it should be officially a thing.
Mm-hmm.
John, block or grab on sports betting in the FGC?
Oh, I'm so tempted. Like I bet on the Smash Bros. Stage changes. That's probably indicative of me having a problem. But I would do it. I would do it. I'm not proud of that, but I think that it would be interesting. Hopefully it doesn't crash and burn everything. And I'm well aware that it's probably a shitty thing, but I'm interested. My interests are piqued. So if it were legal, yeah, absolutely.
Steve, block or grab on sports betting in the FGC?
I just feel like there's way too much room for things to go bad right now to be in favor of it. So I'm going to block. That said, we're going to be dealing with this sooner or later because, you know, there are reports that New Jersey will have their licenses up and running by the end of this month. So if we come around towards East Coast Throwdown, you know, people can go to the venue, enjoy the show, take a step out, you know, drive to the local book place, call them up and say, hey, I want $50 on Sonic Fox to win it all. And then, you know, go Jeff Galooly on Goichi. Not that I'm saying anyone should do that. Don't do that. If you think you want to do that, don't do that. You're an idiot. Don't do that.
It's going to be crazy. They're going to need bookies, right? And they're going to need people who know the numbers. It's a professional job in sports. Like, and the spreads are really good, right? Like, it's hard. No one beats every spread. It's impossible because they're so good at it at this point.
We should make a new cryptocurrency, Bison Bucks or something like that, so it can be totally anonymous. Oh, man. Oh, the rabbit hole.
Isn't it ravioli coins or something?
Because that's sure, exactly what we need, another freaking cryptocurrency.
Boyer D-Bucks.
I just woke up and thought, man, you know what this world needs? Another cryptocurrency.
There's you thought that too?
Hey, guys. 30th anniversary tournament series. ST, Alpha, Third Strike. How about that? Look, we even have a tweet about it. Announcing the Street Fighter 30th Anniversary Tournament Series featuring Super Street Fighter 2 Turbos, Street Fighter Alpha 3, and Street Fighter 3 Third Strike. I remember the 25th Anniversary Tournament Series. It kicked off in Austin, Texas. That was a badass event. They had a real gem of a game. See what I did there? Street Fighter Cross Tekken. They had Street Fighter 4, and I think they were playing Marvel at it too, maybe. I'm going to be making that up. Anyway, it was a good time. Steve, you're real excited about this. Do you think it rains on the parade of the ST Survival Revival dudes?
No. I mean, they're all about, you know, more people getting their hands on Super Turbo and playing it. So I know they're excited that, you know, Capcom's throwing $7,000 for a pot bonus at the CEO event. So it's three tournaments, one game per event that's getting this that's part of the series. So Super Turbo is going to be at CEO, the game at CEO. Alpha 3 is going to be at SCR, and then Third Strike at Canada Cup. And there will be $7,000 pop bonuses from Capcom for each of these games.
Who y'all like for ST?
Depends on who comes from Japan.
Yeah.
Someone from Japan, probably.
Someone from Japan.
I would predict Japan versus Japan, grand final. Okay. Third place, Japan. Fourth place, probably Japan.
Who y'all like for Street Fighter Alpha 3?
That's the interesting one, Vi, right? Because no one fucking plays Alpha 3 anymore.
Vi, yeah, I like Vi for it.
Vi is not playing. Ooh,
he's not playing.
Some Watson's dude still plays Alpha 3 on Kyera or whatever, and he's going to win. Yes.
If Watson won, I would just love for him to call out Vi. Yes. You know, and just have the most awkward award ceremony ever. You know, just kind of grinning through gritted teeth, both of them shaking hands.
Love you, man.
What about Street Fighter 3 Third Strike? There's still plenty of people that play Third Strike, including here in Austin. It's one of the hubs of Third Strike activity.
It's going to be interesting to see. I mean, I think this will bring people out. I think you'll get some flyovers for these,
yeah,
specifically coming for these events. Now, a few of them are pretty soon, right? So it's like kind of crazy they announced it at the timing they did. But I mean, until we see the entrance, it's like impossible to say it, right?
Yeah. Javi, what game we have Javi in the chat from Texas Showdown. What game are you playing out of all three? Which one of these excites you the most out of Alpha 3, ST, and Third Strike? We'll find out here. Let's all wait in silence until Javi responds, even though there's a delay on the stream.
It'll be like 30 seconds after your response too, right?
You don't think it's a good idea to wait?
No, it's probably terrible.
Okay. Well, that brings us to the end of the panel, guys. Coming up, we have an interview with Rick the Hotto, wherein we're going to spend 30 minutes talking about these Chanified characters. Check them out,
Alon.
That's
a good way to do 30 minutes.
Alon, how about you throw them up there, Alon? Just kidding. Here we got Giefer Sutherland. We have Karin, Alex, all of them. They got the works. Even Sagat and Cody are there already. Look at that. Guile is the best. I think Guile is one of the funniest ones because the shades. They're all pretty funny, though. You got Falk, and what was his name? Is G, right?
Yeah.
That we should have block grab on these.
Well, next time. I suppose it's not too late.
Next time. It's 6:58.
Okay, let's go through every single one in a block grab starting now. Just kidding. I take my previous statement back. I think the Armika one's the best. Thank you, Alon, for cutting away right when I was pointing out
Armika. Oh, because the butt, yeah.
Yeah, the butt. It's pretty funny. And Nikolai's pretty good, too. And Vega, not bad. They're all hilarious.
Are these all supposed to be like Blanca-chan versions?
No.
Is that what it is?
No. That's not it at all. Why do you ask? All
right. And we posted it on Event Hubs, but I haven't read this. That was my day off.
All right, guys. That brings us to the panel. Have been listening to the sultry sounds of John Velociraptor Guerrero. And Steve, Ace King Offsuit Jurek.
A.K.A. The Punisher.
The Punisher, yes. Don't do it. Not don't do it. I have to say it again. Don't do it.
Yeah. All right. Well, gentlemen, thank you very much for joining us. We'll see you next week.
Love you, miss you, bye.
Later, dude. Adios. Coming up next. First of all, let's point this out. It was in the studio, and Alon put it up here. Look at that. Isn't that scary?
Very scary.
We're going to bring on Rick Thayer, the Hotto.
The Hotto.
I found out something interesting.
What did you find out, Efren?
He's an 09er.
Oh, wow. So am I.
He's an 09er, and he said, I'm a proud 09er. I don't carry all that baggage of those OG losers. No, he did not say that.
Well, 9 years in, and he's like one of the fixtures of the FGC, so pretty impressive there.
I would say so. Obviously, we're going to talk to him about Combo Breaker. The numbers are out, and there's some interesting stuff to glean from there.
I would say pretty dang good, though. I mean, no one, yeah. Some good things to glean.
There's a lot of good stuff to talk about. And in fact, there he is. Rick, the Hotto, Thayer. What's going on, man?
You got it right this time.
I got it right this time. Thayer.
You did.
I was just busting your chops here a second ago saying that I found out you're an 09er.
True.
Yeah? But you wear that proudly?
I have absolutely no reason to. This community is significantly larger after the 09 arrival than it was beforehand.
Yeah, that's a good point. But none of us are OGs, man. We can never claim to be. At what point does an 09er become an OG?
Probably when a new game cycle has come out and we've all been placed.
Well, then we're all OGs.
It's already happened.
Rick, we're really happy that you're joining us here tonight. Of course, you have Combo Breaker right around the corner, and you're probably pretty busy, so we appreciate you taking 30 minutes out of your time to come and talk to us. The numbers are out. Do you want to talk about them? I think I have them right here. We can pull them up on the screen. Dragon Ball is at the top with 744. Yeah. Are you surprised by that?
Yes, mainly because that many people being anywhere is always a little bit surprising. It's cool, though. Like, having a new game that's had that kind of response, it's been a while.
When did you think that was a possibility? Because obviously, last Combo Breaker, this game didn't exist even as... I don't even think they even really talked about it at all. I don't think it had even been announced. Mm. So, when did you start thinking something might beat Street Fighter V at my tournament?
I mean, that happened the first time we ever threw Combo Breaker. Just
okay.
MKX doing well.
Fair enough. Yeah, true.
In terms of Dragon Ball, that became real probably about a month ago when we put out the potential cap listing. Both Dragon Ball and Street Fighter were pretty much right around the same attendance. They still were for the majority of this build. And then life happens.
And then not that close second is Street Fighter V, of course, our condition with 686. Yeah, I mean, that's like, what, 60-point difference, Muscle Menos? And then Tekken, Guilty Gear, Injustice, and Killer Instinct still repping there with 139. The Mystery Game Tournament. What's the Mystery Game?
It's actually an incredibly long list of games. The Mystery Game changes every single match in the bracket.
Oh, dang. Okay. And then, of course, you have Mortal Kombat XL with decent numbers, Infinite tied with XL, Smash for Wii U, Vampire Savior, King of Fighters tied with Vampire Savior, ST with one less, Third Strike at 100, Smash Melee 95, Mortal Kombat 9. And I asked you earlier, what's Ultra Street Fighter 4 at?
I believe it's currently at 19.
Dang. Where's Puyo Puyo Tetris at?
5 or 6.
Dang. Okay. But you have, you have more information than just these numbers, right? You can look at how many people entered and crossovers. What are some of those interesting things that you saw from looking at these numbers?
I think the biggest takeaway in general is just how much everything has grown. And we look at the game spread, and particularly look at the games that have come back year over year. Street Fighter V grew, which means not only did we have the same amount of entrants we had last year plus some, we also replaced anyone who can't come this year or isn't available or drop the game in favor of something else or so on and so forth. So that alone is pretty sweet to me. Tekken's growth is absurd. I think that game has grown by about 189%. In terms of people who have traveled specifically to play one game, Tekken's actually in the lead. 44% of the people who entered only one game entered Tekken, which is awesome, actually. The other interesting thing is right behind that, though, is Street Fighter V. 38.5% of people that only entered one game at CB entered Street Fighter. So when we look at unique attendance, those two games kind of drive the focus.
Wow.
Whereas we go all the way back down to some of the retro games, which we'd expect to be the games that have kind of singular attendance in a lot of places, 2% of people showing up to play Third Strike are only playing Third Strike.
So what you're saying, or what you can gather from that, is they come for their main game, and they're like, oh, there's all these extra tournaments. Yeah, I'll join that. I'll enter that. Is that what that means?
Well, it means that there are just two types of people in the community overall when you look at attendance. There's people who show up and play exactly one game. It's the only reason they're there. It's the only thing that they're probably going to dive into over the course of the weekend. And then there's everyone else who has a main game or has two main games or has 10 games in some cases and just tries to consume as much fighting game content as they can for the weekend. And so having the ability to serve both of those groups, I think, is a really important and kind of impactful thing at a lot of our events.
How are your spectator passes doing?
Doing pretty well. We've got a number that I can't remember offhand because I was not prepared for that question at all. 300 or 400 at the moment. We'll probably see if few hundred more at the door. That's pretty good, actually, since this is the first year that we're charging spectator passes, which I felt was going to lead to no spectators coming through. So it's kind of dope to see that the response is still, this show's a good show, I'll pay to enjoy it.
And how many New Japan Pro Wrestlers are going to be at your event?
Now, probably none, which is, I think, a good thing, because they've got an important place to be just a few weeks later.
Now, I mean, the big thing that I glean from these numbers is that Combo Breaker has become the mecca for at least 5 or 6 of the titles, if not more, on that list. And if you're discounting, you know, entrance at Evo just because it's Evo for most of the titles on that list, what does it mean to you to keep running Mortal Kombat 9 and Skullgirls and Killer Instinct and being the tournament that these people go to?
I mean, to me, that's incredibly satisfying. Like, MK9 is pretty much the game I came from. So being able to have a bracket the size of 74 people this year in 2018, outside of just being absurd, is humbling and really, really exciting. Because now I get to watch a whole bunch of things that were part of my genesis in this community all over again with, in this case, thousands of people that weren't there to experience it with me the first go-round. Killer Instinct is still my favorite game, it's still the game I play the most, so having 139 people to sit down and theoretically pretend I'm going to have the time to play with over the course of the weekend is really important to me as a player and as an organizer. Seeing so many games just pick Combo Breaker as kind of their event to build out their show is also inspiring, because there's a break point in there somewhere. We can't be all things to all games, but if we can, as much as possible, be all things to the collective community at large, that's going to mean we're continuing to hit our primary goal and hopefully being something the community continues to appreciate.
So I want to come back in a little bit. I have some more questions for you in general, but I want to come back in a little bit to Tekken. Maybe we can talk a little bit more about them and their circuit or their Pro Tour. But, you know, these are questions that we got from our from Steve and John and Elon and Mike, and I put our questions together here for you. What do you do differently that sets your event apart?
So the interesting thing is I don't always feel like we do that much different. We throw a whole bunch of games, which at this point a lot of events can say they do. We have as big a spectacle main stage experience as we possibly can, but CEOs is still bigger, or there's lots of events that are coming up with cool and similar ways of showcasing main stages. Dante would have just seen that at Texas Showdown a week ago, 2 weeks ago. What I think we have done a little bit differently is we try as much as possible to equate all games as equal. We know that's not true. There's 700 plus people playing Dragon Ball, and there's 70 people plus playing MK9. But in promoting everything as equitably as we can, in trying to promote the genre or the culture or some level of, I think this is cool, you should think this is cool too, we try to rally together a little bit differently. I think we also just promote a lot more content over the course of the year, which is partially because I have a design and marketing background, but also just because when we're running 19 games and trying to treat them all equal, that means to make one combo breaker post means we're making 19.
And that's interesting. Now, but moving on here, giving attention, this is another topic, giving attention to emerging rather than established players or scenes. Now, I don't see any emerging scenes here, really. I guess Tekken 7, but not really. That's not really fair to say it's emerging. It's a newer game. But that's your philosophy, right? Let's shine, let's spread that light. How do you think you're doing that with Combo Breaker 2018?
So I think we're doing it in different ways than just, here's the newest game, let's push forward. We still have the newest games that we can. Marvel vs. Capcom Infinite is on here. Dragon Ball is on here. Hunter Knight Inbirth's latest variation is on here, which is probably the surprise of the year. That is a completely unexpected attendance number. But we're also making sure all of those games get stage time. Like, Hunter Knight Inbirth, although this is not announced yet, is going to have a 4v4 exhibition at Combo Breaker that's going to be the main stage activity Saturday night.
Breaking news. You heard it here first.
No more details on that one. But, I mean, we're going to take the game, we're going to put it on main stage, we're going to give it the biggest presentation we can, and see if we can't help other people enjoy and appreciate that game in the same way that Skullgirls was the game we did that our first year. Killer Instinct was the game we did that with the second. Tekken we did that with last year. Just to try and kind of go, these are other cool, interesting parts of our community at large. Let's celebrate them together and see if we can have a good time.
How is working with some of the companies, you don't have to give any specific examples, but how is working with some of the companies that have these pro tours and, you know, catering to their needs while catering to your own? Have you had any difficulties or problems with that, or has it all been pretty smooth sailing?
So for the most part, it's actually been smooth sailing. There's a truth that every dev pub wants their game to be the biggest, best, most focused on. And I think that's completely acceptable. That's their job. I'd be worried if that wasn't what they wanted. But thus far, they've all been understanding of Combo Breaker's core philosophy and allowing us to work around it. So I've never really had to sit in a meeting arguing about where this game is going to go on our stage scheduling or how we're going to advertise this secondary activity in relation to this game or whether or not we can actually just put out an ad that advertises our entire event spread at once. That level of accommodation is something I think our community doesn't always give those guys credit for. And it's probably something we should do because they arguably don't have to. And so I'm continually appreciative that they kind of give us that rope to run with.
And more specifically, with running old games that are not necessarily going to sell anymore, that's been totally fine too. Because I think I heard that NetherRealm is actually giving money to some of the older games, right?
NetherRealm this year put a $2,500 pot bonus on not only Mortal Kombat XL, but Mortal Kombat 9.
That's just insane to me. And awesome.
I'm not sure we ever played Mortal Kombat 9 at EVO for $2,500. So it's mystifying, but really exciting to see because a lot of these games are things that don't necessarily go away. We're seeing that with Capcom this year, and part of that is the 30th anniversary edition is coming out, but there's nothing to say they had to activate a micro circuit that's having $7,000 tournaments for a bunch of games that haven't been new for a very, very long time. And aside from the fact that I think that gives all those old players a great moment to kind of come out and celebrate the game again and kind of flex that nostalgia, it's helping get new players interested in it again too. And what I think we've found with fighting games is anyone who comes into this community usually tries more than one game, and going back into an old game doesn't necessarily produce a bad experience. I go and sit down and try to play the original Tomb Raider at this point, and that's unpleasant. It exactly work with how I expect a game to function right now. But Street Fighter 2 still works almost exactly as I would expect a fighting game to work. And so you see things like the Tournament of Legends that we're having a qualifier out of Combo Breaker. We're seeing this situation with MK9. You're seeing Vampire Savior with 100-plus registrants. That can't all be coming from Legacy players, because there, to a certain extent, weren't that many traveling players during Legacy time.
It's exciting, though, isn't it? I also imagine that it's a drop in the bucket for Warner Brothers, NetherRealms, and there's obviously a game coming out. Ed Boon's been teasing that. We got E3 around the corner. We're all expecting to hear something about Mortal Kombat. What a nice thank you to the fans that have been here this long in anticipation of that. Tekken. The Tekken World Tour, I feel, has done everything right that maybe the CPT has done wrong. Maybe that's not fair to say, but I feel like they've learned from mistakes and been successfully avoided them. And I've been surprised about, I don't think there's been much negative feedback at all on the game, the tournaments, the reception in general has just been really good. Took forever for the game to come out, but maybe that was worth it, right? Well, what are your thoughts on that?
I mean, I think it was definitely worth it. We had years of waiting for the game being a struggle. I know in that interim, Bandai Namco even shipped around arcade versions of the game to Wizard Worlds across the U.S. saying, here, we'll give you a chance to play it because this is all you got for a long time. But the backside of that is we have a great game. Like, that's a really fun game to play. That's an amazing game to watch. It's an exciting game to watch. And I've definitely been one of the people, particularly as an 09er, where Tag 2 wasn't the most exciting game for me to consume, but Tekken 7 pretty much is. If I'm going to turn on a stream right now, that's usually the one I want to watch. And the tour has done a pretty good job of cultivating that feeling in not only the player base, but I think the general fighting game fan, because there's more people watching Tekken right now than ever before. Mm-hmm. More people watching fighting games, period, than ever before. But I think if we look at last year versus this year, that game's just growing and doesn't show any real sense of slowing down.
I wonder, I don't even know how you would gauge this. There's probably some ways to get the metrics, but is the player base growing or is the viewer base growing? I feel like when you put Rips and Markmans and Erises on the stream to commentate, you're going to draw people. I mean, it's fun to watch.
So the interesting thing that Texas Showdown, let's use that as an example. I know that when I tuned in on Sunday, you had almost as many viewers on the mainstream as you did on Eris's restream, and then you had additional people that were watching a Polish broadcast, and you had additional people that were watching other personalities broadcasting the game. But when you look at all of those viewers kind of disseminated, that's just more people watching Tekken as a whole. And if that's also reflecting the fact that the tournaments are getting larger, which for the most part they are, I think everything has grown this year. I don't know if I can say whether or not something like Kuwait Battle Royale did. I don't have data from last year on that one, but Final Round was up. Combo Breaker was up by an absurd degree. I think Texas Showdown was up. It growing on viewership, it growing on tournament entries, it's just growing. And so I think that's going to continue, and it's good.
Rick, we have a question from the chat. Drew or False asks, is Soul Calibur 6 going to be at Combo Breaker?
Yes, it is. We have free PlayStations all weekend and a character auction.
Oh, right on.
It's Friday, Saturday night right now, but that's happening.
Yeah, I mean, we mentioned it on the show a week ago, but Texas Showdown had Soul Calibur 6, and it was packed the entire time. Nobody ever got off that spot. You know, recently in the air, I guess you could say, has been FGC could be making so much more money if they just pulled their head out of their open bracket ass. Open brackets versus invitationals was where that conversation kind of ended up. There's differing opinions, strong opinions on both sides. Maybe we're going to get a completely biased answer from a TO of one of the most relevant tournaments in the country. But maybe you can also just glean some, you know, information for us or some thoughts on it. Where do you stand, or what can you tell us, man?
So I think we need both. I think a lot of times this conversation gets framed around whether it's a grassroots product versus some kind of corporate and control product. But that isn't always, I think, the root of what we're talking about. When we look at old fighting game community products forever, there have been invitational style exhibition content. If we go back to Seasons Beatings, there was important exhibitions at those. If you go to East Coast Throwdown or Winter Brawl, those have always capped off with some kind of feature exhibition. And all an invitational ever is an exhibition that tells you who's showing up in advance. And if we get into a situation where we have exhibitions where we have good ways to qualify players into them, which is either tournament wins or social presence or some combination of the two, I don't necessarily think that's a bad thing, because it's also rewarding players who are developing both of those skill sets. And if that's not replacing a grassroots product or a open bracket product, I'm actually all for it. And I think with how the fighting game community has developed and how it sits today, we're not in a situation where invitationals are suddenly going to replace open bracket tournaments. In fact, we have really cool invitationals like Red Bull's Kumite series that has an open bracket tournament to decide who the last player to compete in the invitational is. So you actually get both at one event. You could make an argument that Tekken Finals this year is an invitational where we're going to invite a bunch of players after a circuit who have performed to a approvable level. They're going to go to finals, and then there's going to be a tournament at finals, which is another open bracket that's going to qualify someone into that actual invitational finals. So I think we already do a lot of the things that we seem to rally against based on who's doing them. And I have mixed feelings about that pretty regularly, but I think we need both of those products. Not necessarily even for a, hey, how do we find sustainability or money, but just how do we continue to celebrate players that have separated themselves from the pack without necessarily removing the pack culture?
Certainly. And I mean, Combo Breaker runs a lot of kind of middle ground events. I mean, you just mentioned the UNIB 4v4. You run these character auctions and mystery game tournaments and such every year. What do those mean to Combo Breaker and as a whole? And what I mean by that is, let's say next, like we eventually get to Evo size and you can't run as many games as you're running now. How many of those stick around, and how important are those parts of Combo Breaker to you? Like, will there always be a character auction if it means you can only run 10 games instead of 11?
So my feeling on that is there's a point at which Combo Breaker can't exist as it is today.
Okay.
And if we get to that point, I'm just going to cap the entire event. And there's going to be a maximum amount of people that register. There's going to be a maximum amount of people that can attend. Because a lot of those aspects of what Combo Breaker is, I don't want to lose. They're too important to why I got involved in directing the event. They're too important to, I think, why the community likes the event. So it's not trying to really grow to that scale or replace events that are at that scale. I think we need those experiences, too, in the same way that Metallica at a stadium is a cool experience, and Metallica at the little club down the road from my house is a cooler experience, in my personal opinion, but not for everyone. So we're gonna continue to try to do all of those things to the utmost of our ability at all times, because I think when you have an environment dedicated to stringent competition, which is what the Open Bracket Tournament is, wrapping that experience in four fun activities that are still rooted in competitive play is what kind of brings all of the attendees that we have together. I'm watching Esam from the Super Smash Brothers every year sit down and watch whatever is going on for Marvel, whether it's an exhibition or an auction. It just doesn't matter. He's literally always front row, really hype about it. I want that to always happen. That's the biggest reason why we throw this event as a whole.
Now, throwing badass tournaments is not the only thing you do. You also work at Twitch. What do you do at Twitch?
So I work in the esports team, and I work on fighting games. Okay. I spend a lot of my time doing the, for lack of a better phrase, admin work around Tekken World Tour. I do a lot of support work for all the other fighting game titles that are related to Twitch, and we try to also then come up with developmental things and outreach opportunities for fighting games. Basically, I do everything I do with tournaments, just on more of a dev pub publisher platform kind of scale.
And, you know, what's the general vibe over there? I remember a day and time when one Mike Ross was working at Twitch, and we had him on the show, and I put that question to him, how's the FGC doing in the greater esports landscape? And he said, it's the tortoise and the hare, which implied that we were moving along slow and steady. That was probably 2 years ago, if not more. Where are we now?
I think we are steadier and even slower. There's no rocket ship to attach to a decentralized community culture. I think that was true with skateboarding. I think that's been true with music festival culture. I think that's just kind of true around the board. And that's what fighting games are. We can attach a rocket ship to Street Fighter or Injustice or Tekken or Killer Instinct and see what happens. And sometimes that's going to mean getting to the moon and being able to try to do something different now that you're there. And sometimes it's going to mean shooting about halfway to the moon, seeing all these cool things out in the stars, not being able to hold on to it, and then having to go back to whatever was on Earth and going, I don't know if I really like this anymore. And so as long as fighting games are always steadily increasing and steadily trying new things and experimenting, which I think working at Twitch has allowed me to kind of plug into, that's the exciting thing to me about being at the office. That's the exciting thing to me still about this community in a big picture, kind of what can we do explosion sort of way. But like Mike before me, I'm pretty big on making sure we do it in slow, controlled ways.
And, you know, to that end, though, I'll be watching a stream. I'm like, man, this is some of the best FGC streaming I've ever done in a while or watched. But then there's like Ninja playing Fortnite with an extra zero on the viewer count. Maybe it's unfounded, but sometimes I get worried. I'm like, man, what if, even though the FGC has a lot of heart and it's got some great entertainment and all that, it's just not as big a fish and maybe isn't as worthy in the grand scheme of attention or love or investment or all that. Is that an overblown concern, or is there any truth to that? How does Twitch proper feel about FGC?
Who's your favorite band?
Oh, I don't know. It's just a band called Maná that sings Mexican rock and roll music.
You feel like that band's doing well? They have a decent tour, cool fan base, good culture around them?
Sure.
Is that band doing as well as Taylor Swift?
No.
Same thing.
All right.
Every band in this country could be trying to book Taylor Swift every night. Arguably, they should. That's probably the most profitable thing they could do. There's 365 other nights of the year. We've got plenty of time to fill every other minute with whatever we can find to be worthwhile. And fighting games have shown themselves to be worthwhile. There's a fandom here. There is a pervasive culture around this fandom that isn't going anywhere. It's to a certain extent self-sustaining. And as long as we can continue to make that more interesting to outsiders who aren't fans yet and bring them into the fold, that's all we can ask for. We don't need to be Coke. NW Rock is still doing pretty damn good.
Mm-hmm. It always comes back to Taylor Swift. You have a framed picture of Taylor Swift at your house, don't you?
It wasn't framed, it was a calendar.
Oh, okay. that's interesting. I feel a little bit better to hear you say that. I appreciate the perspective. Speaking of the FGC being on multiple platforms, I can't remember it being on TV in the way that it has been in recent months and years. E-League was cool. Now we have kind of this reality show version of the FGC. What are your thoughts on that? By and large, that's not on Twitch, right? So I'm asking your opinion as not a Twitch employee.
I like more people watching fighting game content almost regardless of what it is. And I don't often care where it is. I think watching stuff on Twitch, particularly since gaming as a whole has kind of adopted Twitch as our platform of choice. It has our chats and our emotes and a lot of little ways that we can interact with each other that I think is an interesting add-on to the viewing experience. So I generally prefer to watch on the platform that I work at, but more people watching fighting games is not a bad thing. So from a how do we grow this community standpoint, go for broke.
You know, speaking of more people watching it or having more avenues to watch it, I think this is the first year, and I hope this isn't a touchy subject, that Street Fighter V rights are not exclusive to Twitch, at least the CPT. You can find it on YouTube, you can find it on Facebook, and, you know, it's really starting to disseminate. I suspect that has everything to do with John D., but I don't know. if you're on board with it being seen by more people on more platforms, is this a good thing or a bad thing? Or is this kind of the end of an era? Because, I mean, well, I'll let you answer. Then I'll give you an opinion.
It's the end of the era. I mean, I can't speak to how that stuff came to pass because now you are dealing with BD and legal and a bunch of stuff that I thankfully don't have to touch every day because I really don't have the patience for contracts. Mm-hmm. But it's cool to see more people watching more stuff. That's probably going to be my answer to every version of that question you have because that's just what I believe. And I'm a big enough believer in producing cool stuff that if you give me the same product at 10 different venues on 10 different platforms, some version of that is the one that I find the most interesting or that I align to or has the experience that I want. And as long as Twitch can produce the version of that that is the most interesting or is the most interactive or is the coolest, that's a win for the company, in my opinion, and more ways than one. But if all that happens here is more people watch fighting games and then they come back and watch Best of Five on Twitch, now they've discovered there's more stuff around fighting games to consume, that's probably a win too.
Yeah. I feel like no hardcore FGC fan is watching it anywhere but Twitch. And I'm not just trying to blow smoke up your ass. It just feels right. And watching it on Facebook doesn't feel right. Maybe Facebook and YouTube is where people discover it and people who already know are on Twitch. I don't know. It feels like that's a gut feeling on that one.
Yeah, I have no idea on that one.
I have one last thing that I want to talk to you about before we let you go, and it is these awesome... this artwork here. I think I'm sure you're familiar with it. This is just so cool, man. I'm tickled by it. What can you tell us about the artist and about the tradition at Combo Breaker to have, you know, special art?
So Metameeks, the artist behind these, is actually one of the guys who worked on Combo Breaker's trailers this year. So he's the guy who did all of the glitch effects and some of the color aberrations. And he worked with Esteban and Eric to put those pieces together. He's got a table at the event where he's putting these illustrations and I think some stickers together and whatnot. And these types of products isn't even the right word. These types of secondary vehicles for our fandoms are super important to being fans of something. And seeing something this creative and this well put together is just a rip. The guile is so good.
Yeah, the guile's great. Guile's your favorite? Guile's your favorite on there?
I don't know if Guile's my favorite, but I think he's arguably the best executed.
What you got, mate?
The last thing I was just going to say was, I mean, Combo Breaker at this point has reached a level of notoriety that is great, obviously. For other people running tournaments, what part of Combo Breaker do they need to copy? Is it the crazy exhibitions? Is it just running everything on time? What should people take from Combo Breaker who want to make their tournament better?
Make your staff bigger.
Okay. Good one.
We have a terrible, terrible ongoing notion that events are run by single people or small groups of people. Every event in this country is run by multiple people. Even your local, whoever your local TO is, probably still has buddies helping them drive gear to the venue or manage brackets. And as events scale up and as they get bigger, you need more and more trustworthy people. So take care of the crew that's around you. Help train them and teach them so that they can replace you as soon as humanly possible, because that's when you're going to have the best peer group to work with. And reach out into the community and try to build a local scene that is not just supportive of playing the game, but is supportive of kind of pushing on the culture and making events happen. Combo Breaker exists because the Illinois and the Midwest community put a lot of its own ambitions into not just producing good events, but in producing good staff. And those two things are so intrinsically aligned that it is something I think we can all do better by putting a greater focus on.
Rick, unfortunately, we're actually a little bit over here, but is there anything else you want to leave us with before we let you go?
Combo Breaker is way too soon. It's next weekend. Cannot make it. We're going to go live Friday by, I think it's 1 p.m. currently. And we're more or less running fighting games through Sunday at 10 p.m. So tune in, watch the show. I think there's 9 feeds this year for you to pick from. Let me know what you do and don't like.
All right, Rick. Well, we want to thank you again for coming on the show, especially since you're so busy. We always love having you on, especially because you're just doing so much, right? It's not just any old FGC guy doing tournaments, making moves, helping us out on the inside with Twitch, and we're really grateful. We appreciate your time, man.
Thanks for running the show every week.
You got it, man. All right, that was Rick the Hotto Thayer joining us, presumably from somewhere in Illinois.
I would hope so, this close to the event. Or maybe not, I don't know. I mean, wherever he is, he'll figure it out.
And that was the show. I'm Efren, this is Mike. You're watching Best of Five. We'll see you next week.